Judiciary Committee come to order is Monday morning, April 12th, 2010, at 8:35 in the morning. We have a quorum to conduct business. Senator Coghill is here, Senator Wilikowski, Senator Egan, and myself, Senator French. We have one bill in front of us this morning, HB 408, brought to us by my counterpart in the House, Representative Jay Ramirez, Chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. Welcome to the committee. Representative Ramirez, I see you have your ACE staffer with you. Ms. Pearson, welcome. Put yourselves on the record and tell us about your bill.
Senator French, members of the Judiciary Committee, a privilege to come before you, a privilege to be here with Jane Pearson. We all have extraordinary people we work with. I assure you, Senator, Mr. Chairman, I would not be here without Jane Pearson next to me, and I'll leave you to your own conclusions about how able the committee would be without their aces. Mr. Chairman, members, House Bill 408 is a remarkable bill. Mr. Chairman, I've had the privilege on the House side of being the chair of the Judiciary Committee for 4 years, and one of the things that has been greatly troubling to me over that four-year period is we have a tendency always to turn the screw to the right and tighten the screw, and as a consequence, we often seem to make more felons. We establish more felony crimes. We create more felons, and to an extent, my own observation has been that we have created a permanent underclass of felons. So this bill is particularly meaningful to me because it is demonstrative of the legislature's ability to put a little bit of sunlight in the basement and offer a ladder back out of that basement for people who, in their youth or years ago, committed a crime, they have changed, they've paid their debt to society, and this is the road back. And this bill we have retitled in committee and on the House floor as a restoration of rights bill. And you're going to hear a very compelling testimony, I think, a little bit later this morning, Mr. Chairman and members. And so what I'd like to do is to go through the bill. It's a little bit technical, particularly for a layperson like myself. So it's helpful, pardon me, for reading a little bit this morning. Mr. Chairman and members, under Alaska law, a person who has been convicted of a felony is not prohibited from carrying a rifle or a shotgun. Under Alaska law, however, a person is prohibited from carrying a handgun or concealing a handgun, which are two different crimes. And I want you to think that a person could be in possession of a handgun, could then be convicted of a felony, and then could still have a handgun long after that felony had been committed. So there are ways for people to, in fact, be in possession of a handgun. And Alaska law currently provides that if you were arrested for having a handgun, that you can go to the court and you can use as a defendant an affirmative defense demonstrating one of three conditions, that you fulfilled all the components of your conviction and ensuing parole or probation. Secondly, that 10 years has elapsed, or thirdly, that there was that it was set aside, that you had been pardoned. And a person may use this to prove their innocence in court. The bill that's before you today does not apply to crimes under 11.41, which are crimes against another person. So anybody who's committed an assault or rape, murder, never will see a restoration of their rights. Mr. Chairman, under federal law, a person who's been convicted of a crime punishable by term of imprisonment for more than 1 year may not possess a firearm. However, federal law also provides that any conviction, I'm quoting, any conviction which has been expunged, set aside, for which a person has been pardoned or has had their civil rights restored, shall not be considered a conviction unless such pardon, expungement, or restoration of civil rights expressly provides that the person may not possess firearms. And this takes us to the U.S. Supreme Court case of Karen versus the United States. Karen versus the United States was provided for an all-or-nothing test, and this is where the state of Alaska fails. And Senator Coghill, I watched you on the House side work a great deal on this alignment of federal law and state law. And in fact, Mr. Chairman, we just did a fix-it bill in Senate Finance that will be going to the floor on a minor consuming, which is a project that we worked on in the last legislature and have been working on this session. And that had to do with, it was the opposite of what is before us today. In that case, if a minor was consuming alcohol, the state put him on probation until he was 21. And then the federal government, which has the best vocational rehab program in the country, which is joining the U.S. Army, a young person couldn't join the U.S. Army because they wanted all of you. And the state of Alaska kept a thumb on you until you were 21 because that was a condition of a minor consuming. So we had to pass a law saying that if a minor joined the military, then the state would release that person from probation, and then the federal government, Uncle Sam, could have all of that person. In this case, we have the opposite, where the federal government has the all-or-nothing test, and the state of Alaska says, yes, you can have your rights restored for a rifle or a shotgun, but no, you may not have a handgun or carry a concealed handgun. And in this case, the federal government then will says that if you can't pass the all-or-nothing test, then you may not have your rights to carry a gun restored. So currently, Alaska has two limitations, specifically on persons who have had their right to possess firearms otherwise restored. 11.61.200 limits a person's right to possess a concealed firearm to their dwelling, property, or while engaged in lawful outdoor activities. And B of that same section provides an affirmative defense for a person charged with possessing a concealable firearm or carrying a concealed carry arm if they have been pardoned, received an SIS, or 10 years has elapsed since the person's unconditional charge. And so, Mr. Chairman and members, unless the Alaska State Legislature amends existing law to modify these two limitations, the existing policy allowing for restoration of rights cannot be carried out, and there will continue to be a gap between federal law and state law, and without this alignment, we cannot return or restore Second Amendment rights to Alaskans who may be 50, 60 years old, committed a felony when they're 18, and for 40 years living in rural Alaska with grown children or grandchildren, are not able to go legally hunting with those kids, and they've long since become law-abiding Alaskans. It's a very compelling and complex but simple piece of legislation, and I look forward to a favorable hearing from the chairman and the committee. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Ramos. Good presentation. Questions for the bill sponsor or his staff? I don't hear or see any right off. We do have folks signed up to testify. To let the committee know, we have Sue McLean here from the Department of Law to answer questions. And also to testify, we also have Don Clark, Brian Judy from the NRA, C.E. Tanner, and Rod Sterling. Why don't we turn to the off nets, and perhaps we can come back to Sue McLean after we've heard from the testimony. But Don Clark, are you there on the line? Don Clark, if you can hear me, put yourself on the record, state your name and affiliation, if any, and we'd be happy to hear your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee. My name's Don Clark, Donald M. Clark. I live in Palmer, and I've lived in Alaska the last 25 years. I'm 64 years old. I have two adult children, two grandkids, and one grandchild. I own my own handyman construction company, also build furniture. I never had a blemish on my record until about 10 years ago when a lady friend with whom I was living at the time asked if I could grow a few plants for her and support her habit. Not thinking clearly, I said sure. Needless to say, it wasn't a good idea. My attorney explained to me the deal the DA was offering. If I pled guilty, I'd get a fine, 2 years probation, and suspended imposed sentence, after which if I completed the conditions set forth by the court, I'd get my rights back. All this happened except when a year or so later I attempted to purchase a new shotgun. I was declined by the federal government. It seemed the state law and the federal law are not interpreted the same way. I then went back to the judge and the prosecuting attorney of my case and got all the paperwork relating to my case and was assured that I'd received all my rights back. But again, the federal government said no. And after I'd exhausted all my options, I went to an attorney to see what could be done to rectify what was wrong with the system, not only for me, but also for all the others who caught in the same dilemma. I feel that the state failed me by telling me I'd get all my rights back when that wasn't the case. This is Alaska, and we all, you know, hunting's a way of life, and even when you're fishing, a firearm is something you like to carry along with you. I feel that HB 408 would correct this oversight and give us back the rights that we've been denied. I thank you very much for hearing my concerns on this issue.
Mr. Clark, thank you for your short and compelling testimony. I appreciate that very much. Next up is Brian Judy from the NRA. Mr. Judy, are you there?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Good morning. Please put yourself on the record, and we'll be happy to hear your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Brian Judy, and I am the Alaska State Liaison for the National Rifle Association, speaking for the NRA this morning. First of all, let me tell you what this bill is not about. It's not about giving firearms to felons. It's already the policy of the state of Alaska to restore firearms rights to former offenders. The right to possess rifles and shotguns is restored upon their release from incarceration, and that's by operation of law. The right to possess handguns is restored if the person receives a pardon, a set aside, or by operation of law after 10 years from unconditional discharge. And with the right to possess handguns comes the ability to carry handguns openly anywhere in the state. They can carry concealed on their property in their home or if they're engaged in a lawful outdoor activity. So currently, the pardon, the set-aside, or the 10-year time frame, the only thing they can't do is carry concealed outside those areas, home property, and will engage in an activity. So essentially, 95% of the rights of these individuals are restored by the state. And further, I should add that their voting rights and thus there as a qualified voter, their ability to hold elective office and their jury rights are also restored by the state. But as Representative Ramis explained, because of this technical and complicated interaction between state law, federal law, and this U.S. Supreme Court case, persons who have had the vast majority of their rights restored by the state of Alaska are still not recognized as having any rights for the purpose of federal law, and they can be prosecuted under federal law for the possession of firearms. Again, as was explained, this Supreme Court case, Karen versus U.S., held that the all-or-nothing test must be applied, and any state weapons limitation activates the uniform federal ban on possessing any firearms. So in other words, the state has restored 95% of these people's rights. But because the state doesn't go that little extra step and restore 100%, for the purpose of federal law, these people had zero rights. So if by House Bill 408 going from 95 to 100 takes these people from zero to 100 in reality, because federal laws are very restrictive and the penalties are very restrictive. So, very few of these people are, I imagine, taking that chance. The intent of this bill is to facilitate the implementation of the existing state policy and essentially allow those persons whose rights have been almost fully restored by the state to exercise those rights and not have them extinguished by the federal government. And again, the two limitations that the slight restriction on concealed carry, and then that the second one is changing the affirmative defense in 1161-200 to an exception. And the reason you have to do that is because other court precedents has found that these people have to be put into a state comparable to people who have never lost their rights. So as long as it's an affirmative defense to a prosecution, then these people can be charged with a crime, and they have to go to court and raise the defense, where other people who have not never lost their right cannot be charged with a crime. So it's a little technical detail, but it's very important. Both of those things have to be changed. I won't go into any more technical detail. I've provided a fair amount of legal background information to the committee members. If there are any questions, I would be happy to address those. Let me just close by saying that it's the hope of NRA that legislators can get beyond the perceived stigma of, quote-unquote, giving firearms to felons and realize the legitimacy of allowing people who have long ago paid their debt to society, let them attain the restoration of their rights that are already provided by the state of Alaska but extinguished because of this twisted interaction between state law, federal law, and this U.S. Supreme Court decision. So I urge your support for House Bill 408, and I will remain available for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Judy. I don't see any questions now, but it is helpful to have you on the line listening in case something comes up. Next up is C.E. Tanner. Mr. or Ms. Tanner, are you there?
Yes, I am here.
Mr. Tanner, nice to have you with us. Please put yourself on the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is C.E. Tanner. I am 69 years old. I am representing myself. I have lived in Alaska for the last 40 years. 30 years ago, I made a mistake, committed a felony, and spent a very short period of time under federal supervision. For the last 25 years, I have led an exemplary life. I have been a real estate broker and a general contractor until my retirement 3 years ago. Shortly after release from federal supervision, I applied for and received a federal relief of disability for firearms. And then upon passage by the legislature of the concealed carry permit legislation, I applied for and received a concealed carry permit, and over the years renewed subsequent times until last year. Last year, the State Department of Public Safety interpreted the statute differently and refused to renew my permit. I feel that the confusion and openness to interpretation in the statute and its conflict with the federal statute is discriminatory, and I strongly urge support of this bill. Thank you.
Mr. Tanner, thank you for your concise testimony. I appreciate that, and so does the rest of the committee. Next up is Ron Sterling. Mr. Sterling, are you there? Mr. Sterling?
Yes, sir.
There you are. Please put yourself on the record, and we'd be happy to hear your testimony.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Ron Sterling. I'm 58 years old. My offense was a drug offense from when I was 18 years old. I was sentenced to probation and 4 weekends in jail. I paid that debt. And now, 40 years later, I'm still paying for this because of this different interpretation or different standards between state and federal law. There was three criteria that were set out, and that was, number one, that you fulfilled all components, which I have. I did my probation. I did my 4 weekends in jail. It's been over 10 years since the offense. It's been 40 years for me. And also that the charge was set aside. And I have the law firm of Wayne Ross, and they've gone to court for me and had this expunged from my record. I've gone to the state trooper headquarters on Tudor to get my background check, which shows that I have no criminal record with the state of Alaska. I did that. I had to do a background check to be able to coach high school and American Legion baseball at service. But I went in a couple years ago to buy some firearms so I could take my wife and my daughter target shooting, and I was denied because of this offense from 40 years ago, which was a nonviolent offense. I'm 58 years old. I've worked the same job for 36 years. My wife and I have been married for 27 years. We've raised three kids. One's married and off on his own. The other two are at school at UAA. I living here in the Alaska lifestyle where, you know, there's hunting and fishing and target shooting. I'm denied the right to purchase a firearm for any of those lawful endeavors. And I certainly appreciate all the help that's been done in the House, and I would thank this committee for hopefully trying to correct this wrong. And I very much appreciate your help. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't see any questions, but again, I appreciate you taking time to testify to the committee this morning. Next up is Eric Stanley. Mr. Stanley, are you there?
Hello?
Good morning. Please put yourself on the record, and we'd be happy to hear your testimony.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is Eric Stanley. And I'm representing myself. Can everybody hear me?
Yes, we sure can. Go ahead.
Okay, apologize. I'm calling from the cell phone.
That's quite okay.
Well over 10 years ago, back when I was 18 or 19, just growing up out in the Aleutian Chain in a very isolated area of Alaska, growing up out there was pretty stressful for a young kid. Wasn't a lot to do, and sometimes we found ourselves, because of lack of events, looking for mischief, and made a stupid decision back when I was a kid. Ended up receiving some stolen property. It was a nonviolent crime. And as a result of that, pretty much how it went down is I went up to the graduation podium, graduated high school, did not skip go, went straight to jail and did not collect my $200. Pretty life-changing experience for a young man, graduating high school and then going straight into incarceration. I served my time of, I believe, somewhere between 30 and 45 days. I was then given 3 years probation, if I remember right, and I completed that with flying colors, suspended imposition of sentence. Since then, a lot of things have changed in my life, with the economy and whatnot. Lost my job in Anchorage about over a year ago, and when I lived in Anchorage at that point in time, my daughter, my 13-year-old daughter, lived right down the street, and it was fairly convenient to go over to her mother's house at any given time and visit her, and we were sharing custody back and forth, so I had the ability to spend lots of time with her. And then I lost my job because of the economic meltdown. Had to relocate down to the peninsula, and now if I play all my cards right and work doesn't affect it, I'm lucky if I see her, you know, once a week, if I'm lucky. As a result of that, it's been pretty hard on me being away from her. Some of the things that we've always enjoyed doing are fishing, camping, mountain biking, outdoor-style activities. You know, I didn't come from a broken home, but I was raised by my grandparents because my parents couldn't seem to get it together back then. And wanting more for my daughter and for her not to walk the path that I had to walk when I was a kid, I try to install, you know, activities in her life where we can spend time together and have good, clean fun. I'll be 34 years old in June. One of the things that was a pastime for me and my grandfather was going hunting and fishing. And obviously, as a direct result, from my ignorant decision back when I was a kid, I no longer have the ability to possess a firearm or engage in hunting activities or outdoor activities. You know, time is something that you just can't get back. And my daughter's 13, and like I said, I'll be 34 in come June. One thing I have not been able to do with her that would mean the world to me would be able to take her hunting. Not only that, but, you know, having a moose in the freezer right now would definitely help because my income, for one, has probably dropped about 40% of what I used to make. Having to relocate, the expense of having to move, and I was pretty lucky I didn't lose my house. I ended up finding a 3-year lease with an Air Force tenant, so I was able to hang on to that. For me, it's having the ability to take my daughter out and have good, clean fun and do things with her that I've never had the ability to do in the world, target shooting, hunting, that type of thing. But I'm also an avid fisherman and an outdoorsman. It's a huge part of my life and has been since I was a kid. And it saddens me that I can't take her down to the, you know, to the Red Hole and take her fishing without worrying about being possibly charged by a brown bear or a black bear. I spend a large majority of my life on the Kenai River. One thing I've noticed in the past 5 years is the explosion in the bear population. To my understanding, years ago, there's an individual down here that worked with the Fish and Game Department and basically put it in a situation where brown bears are protected down here on the peninsula. And although I think that's great, and I think conservation is important of wildlife, because there's really no ability down here to really hunt brown bears, unless it's a nuisance bear or a threat to your property or livelihood, the population has exploded. And in the past 5 years, it seems like every time I go down the river, whether I'm on the bank or in a boat, I see more and more bear every year. In the past 3 years, I've had some really nasty close calls and been in some situations that I'd really care not to be in again. And using my head and what I know about wildlife, fortunately, I was able to get out of those situations. Otherwise, I wouldn't be talking to you right now. But it is a fear of mine that one day my love for fishing will put me in a situation where I can't get out of it. And
Mr. Stanley,
I believe.
Mr. Stanley? Mr. Stanley, I think we have a question for you.
Well, it's actually for the bill sponsor. My understanding is that under current law, you can actually carry a rifle or a shotgun, right, if you're a convicted felon?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, no, you can't because of federal law, because there is a prohibition that not all of a person's rights are Second Amendment rights are restored. They have none, even though Alaska law says they can. Federal law says they can't, so it is federal law that is trumping here. It is creating the problem.
Okay, so, okay. All right, thanks for clearing that up.
Very good, and thank you for that clarification. And Mr. Stanley, we've got several other folks to testify. If we could have you wrap up, please.
I apologize, sir.
Quite okay.
So for me, it's, subsistence would be nice, but for me, it's just having the ability to protect my own life and my livelihood in the situation possibly of a break-in. My house has been broken into before. Luckily, I wasn't home. And just having the ability to do things with my daughter that I've never had the ability to do before. And that concludes my testimony. I understand we have to move on.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Next up is William Satterberg. Mr. Satterberg, are you there?
Yes, Bill Satterberg here.
Go ahead. Put yourself on the record. State your affiliation, if any. We'd be happy to hear your testimony.
My name is William R. Satterberg, S-A-T-T-E-R-B-E-R-G. I'm speaking as a private citizen in Ketchikan right now, but from Fairbanks, Alaska. And I'm strongly in favor of the bill. By way of background, I've been practicing law now for 34 years. A major portion of the work that our firm does is in the area of criminal defense, both federal and state. And we've noticed over the years a serious problem that's developed. By way of history, the state of Alaska for years has had the concept of the SIS, or the suspended imposition of sentence, which says if somebody's made a mistake on a felony, for example, and they've complied with the requirements that the court has imposed upon them, they can have their civil rights restored. Not only have the judges told defendants that in the courtroom, that if you're a good person, you get these things done, you get your rights back, but also the probation and parole office has told them that as well, to include, up until last year, April, a statement which was made to many people that had these SISs, that your gun rights are restored. They're fully restored. Not only can you vote, you're no longer a felon, and you have your weapons rights restored. Last April or so, the Attorney General's office came out with a new position, and they said, well, your weapons rights are not restored because under the Caron decision, which we've heard both from Representative Ramirez, Brian Judy, and most recently Ms. Pearson, because of the Caron decision, because of the disjoint between the federal and the state law, we cannot restore your weapon rights because we will be allowing you to violate federal law. By way of example, I represented a gentleman recently in Tanana who complied with an SIS, made a mistake, pled no contest or guilty, received his year and a half probation, did very well, went to get his guns back from the state troopers. They said, we cannot give you your weapons because we would be breaking federal law to give you your weapons back even though your rights are restored. I think both Mr. Judy and Ms. Pearson have hit the nail right on the head. It is a situation where the state of Alaska must come into conformity with federal law if we are going to restore weapon ownership rights, and not the federal government coming into conformity with state law. There's no way we're going to get the federal government, federal Congress, or the U.S. Supreme Court to say, well, we're going to make an exception for Alaska. As Ms. Pearson said, it's a 99% situation, whereas right now, if the legislature were to pass this law and say, okay, your rights are restored, there is no affirmative defense, because that's where the problem is on the affirmative defense statement. If they said there is no affirmative defense, you get your rights restored, then we would be back in complete parallel with the federal government, and these individuals who do deserve to have their weapon rights restored would be able to have weapon rights. But as long as we have that affirmative defense position in the statute as it currently exists, not only are these people going to be in violation of federal law, but we're going to find also that our own law enforcement agencies, the state troopers, fish and game, probation and parole, are going to say, sorry, we have to enforce federal law, and you're in violation of a federal crime, and therefore you're subject to sanctions. It's a fairly simple process. I've testified three times. Now, this is the third time. And I understand the Department of Law takes no position on this matter, at least they did not during the testimony before House Finance a week or so ago. I understand the fiscal note that the Department of Law put forward was zero for this as far as if this law passed, which the problem that I see is that the Department of Law has said, well, this will make it more difficult for us to prosecute these crimes if we don't have it as an affirmative defense. Well, as a criminal defense attorney, the fact of the matter is that the government bears the burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt in any of its prosecutions. By making this an affirmative defense, we have effectively denied thousands of Alaskans their rights to own weapons after they have complied with their debt to society. I would submit it's a very good bill for the committee to pass. I think it's a bill that is definitely needed in a state such as ours, which is a rural state with many individuals who are out in the bush, depend on weapons for protection from the woods, personal protection, if you will. And I would submit and suggest to the committee that you favor it, view it favorably, pass the bill. I think that's the right thing to do, and I thank you for your time.
Mr. Satterberg, thank you for your knowledgeable testimony. Next up is Richard Owen. I beg your pardon. Senator McGuire joined us quite some time ago, and I forgot to mention that last time, and I almost did it again, so I apologize. But welcome, Senator McGuire. Richard Patterson from Kotzebue, if you're there, please introduce yourself to the committee, and we'd be happy to hear your testimony.
Yes, sir. You got me loud and clear?
We can hear you. Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Okay. My name's Richard Patterson. I represent myself. Good morning, Honorable Senate Judiciary Committee members. It's a great honor to speak with you today. I'm a 50-year-old bush pilot. I've been flying in Alaska for 30 years. The last 15 as a full-time rescue pilot, operating jets, turboprops, and helicopters in both the North Slope Borough and the Northwest Arctic Borough. My wife is from Kotzebue, and that's where I'm speaking to you from today, although I live in Barrow, and I'm working down here right now. I have two sons, both at University of Alaska Fairbanks. Going on 20 years ago, I erred in my ways. I sought help. I knew what was wrong. I corrected it in my life. I went on to raise a successful family, and I've been fortunate enough to use my God-given skills to save thousands of lives in my craft. Prior to my plea agreement, and I pled no contest, I completed my 4 years of probation. I haven't even had a traffic or parking ticket since, by the way. But I discussed, knowing full well the ramifications of loss of firearms to me and my job. I discussed it with counsel and also researched state documents. And at the time, the clemency handbook clearly stated that I did not need a pardon because I wasn't subject to federal disabilities with firearms, and the state would gladly restore my rights to carry long guns, and I made the decision that I could get a breakdown weapon and carry it with me in my job. I went on, and the years went by, and of course I found out that things weren't quite as they seemed, and with this great tremendous confusion regarding 1161-200, I still to this day do not even know if I'm a prohibited person, and nor does anyone else that I can talk to. So I went down a long recovery road and applied for and received a pardon from the governor of the state of Alaska in 2006. Executive clemency is vested solely in the executive branch. This is assured by the separation of powers doctrine, which is listed in the handbook of the state of Alaska on page 4. The clemency power of the governor is guaranteed by the Alaska Constitution, Article 3, Subpart 21, which all legislatures have sworn to protect and defend. The governor has absolute and unfettered authority to pardon under law. The clemency process is long and arduous. It is rarely granted. In fact, only twice since 1995, and I'm one of them. One must prove extraordinary circumstances and exemplary rehabilitation. My full and unconditional pardon is an official restorative instrument issued to me by the state of Alaska. A copy was also sent to the Department of Public Safety, which refutes recent criticism by certain parties that a restoration would be difficult to find or prove. My pardon is embossed with the state seal and signed by the governor. It specifically states its purpose is to restore my rights to possess and use handguns. The following is an excerpt from the current State of Alaska Clemency Handbook. A pardon is a form of executive clemency, which, if full and unconditional, relieves an offender from further punishment and disabilities imposed by reason of a criminal offense. It is an act of grace which represents forgiveness for a particular crime. End of excerpt. Both state and federal law has read under the time-honored rule that words are to be interpreted according to the ordinary meanings thereof, recognize the pardon's valid power in restoration regarding firearms. Yet even today, a person wrongfully convicted and pardoned cannot possess firearms at all under 1161-200. A debt paid is a debt paid. Restoration is restoration. An unconditional pardon is an unconditional pardon. Yes, unelected federal bureaucrats in faraway places with little or no knowledge of Bush, Alaska, have deemed that they know more than our own elected officials. They have little knowledge of what it's like to be charged by two grizzlies, stalked by a polar bear, intervened in and recovered the half-eaten remains of bear mauling victims, or clear the area unarmed each dark morning around your remote home that is frequented by polar bears and rabid fox so your children can safely go to school, all as I have. They have cast a vast lifelong ban on persons unjustly. They have misconstrued meanings such as conceal and possess. They have misinterpreted case law and applied it incorrectly. The pardon's purpose is to relieve the offender from further punishment. However, I still endure the worst punishment of all, being unable to defend my life and those around me. Other states restore firearm rights to fully pardoned state offenders. In other words, there are similar statutes. Presidential pardons also restore firearm rights to federal ex-offenders. The number of persons affected may be small here, but the ramifications are great. Each time I go out hundreds of miles over land, sea, and ice so that others may live, I carry the risk of not being prepared, something that I know all too well. The Arctic is a beautiful, rewarding, challenging environment, but it doesn't do very well to those that make mistakes in preparation. Justice denied one is justice denied all. Please pass this needed and just reform. Let's make 1161-200 function as intended. Thank you for sharing your time with me this morning. Thank you for defending our Constitution and the way of life. And one special thanks to Senators Don Olson, Senator Al Adams, Representative Reggie Jewell, the late Representative Richard Foster, and the Honorable Governor Frank H. Murkowski, all of which, without whose help, I would not be here doing what I do today. Thank you.
Mr. Patterson, thank you, and you may want to include Representative Jay Ramirez the next time you're offering thanks, because he's carried this bill a long way. But I appreciate your testimony. Next up is James Adams. Mr. Adams, are you there?
Hello?
Mr. Adams, welcome to the committee. Please put yourself on the record, and we'd be happy to hear your testimony. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm James Adams, and I'm just representing myself. And basically, on June 5th of 85, I entered a no-contest plea as part of a plea bargain, and it was a felony conviction of which got me 5 years of probation. And under the deal with the judge waived the number 5 condition of not having concealable weapon and firearm or switchblade. And also he put down under special conditions that he seen that I could have the firearms provision would be excluded providing permission is granted from the federal government. And he said there appears to be no basis for the federal government to withhold the permission. So I did apply, and I got a federal firearms license while just starting my probation, basically, because, as I said, my conviction was on June 5th of 85, and I got my federal firearms license on July 1st of 1986. And I had come to Alaska in 64 through 67 and then was back here with my family at 81 through 84. And then in 86, I went to school for gunsmithing up in Pine City, Minnesota. and had my federal firearms license, as I said, and then I went to another gunsmith school in Grants Pass, Oregon from 86 through 87, and then came back to Alaska anyway in 90 and had my federal firearms license. I completed my probation. I've never been in trouble with the law since or before, and I'm 64 years old, and I've got 9 grown children and 17 grandchildren, a great-grandchild, and 2 more grandchildren coming our way. I've been married to my wife for over 32 years, and I've not had any problems with anything illegal. And I wanted to at some time retire and do gunsmithing, but I had my federal firearms license for about 15 years or so, and at the late 90s, I went through the same thing these other people were testifying to, where they say you can have all or none. And I also had that restoration of firearms privileges, by the way, from the federal government, which is why I was able to get the FFL. But anyway, as a bottom line, in the late 90s, I had to give up my federal firearms license. And I also have Wayne Ross as my lawyer. And he looked into my case and told me had he been my lawyer in the first place in 85, I would have never had a felony conviction. And at that time, I didn't know that, and I had a legal aid lawyer. And so anyway, that's the situation. So what I was wanting to do was to be able to have the ability to do some gunsmithing. And later on, I had been driving truck, and I had an injury, and I wasn't able to go back to work, and so now I'm on a disability type of Social Security, and I'm not allowed to even own a gun or go shooting, which is the enjoyment in my life, and I would like to someday be able to go shooting with my grandchildren, and I would like to have been able to go on shooting more with my children, and I just want this thing to go through because I think it's right, and I feel that part of my life that I enjoy has been kept away from me for this. And I did comply to everything that the state wanted and kept up my part of the plea agreement, you see. And as far as I'm concerned, had the rest of the plea agreement been kept up for me, I would have my firearms rights. And that's basically about all I have to say.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Adams. Appreciate you taking the time to testify to the committee this morning. Is there anyone else online who'd like to testify about HB 408? Great. Let's turn then to Sue McLean here in the room with us. Ms. McLean is a representative of the Department of Law, and welcome to the committee. You know what to do. Please put yourself on the record and tell us about your view of the bill or the department's view of the bill.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'm Sue McLean. I'm the director of the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. And I really am here more than anything else to answer questions, but I know that there is one. And that has to do with the department's concern about the affirmative defense. And I will simply affirm that the testimony that the committee has heard this morning is an accurate view of the federal government regarding our the status of our possession of firearms laws, which is that because there's this little restriction that pertains only to people who have a suspended imposition of sentence in that they can't carry concealed except if they're in their own home or on their own property or hunting and fishing, that is read by the FBI as prohibiting any possession or purchase at all of former felons of firearms, regardless of how far into the future it goes. That I've talked to the FBI on many occasions, and I've talked to many citizens about this law. So I will
We'll just stop there just for a second, because, I mean, I've read Karen, you read Karen. It's hard to get that result out of reading that case.
Mr. Chairman, I have talked to the representative from the FBI on more occasions than I care to relate to you. And the reason is because when someone runs into a problem with their federal gun rights, it is not uncommon for the federal government to refer them back to me. and there is nothing I can do for them because their problem is with the federal government. I speak with them frequently. They want to make sure that we tell people that the fact that they have rights under the state to possess firearms does not mean that they have federal rights to possess firearms. And they're very clear and frequently tell me that, and I do tell people that.
So I guess, I mean, just so the record, yeah. So everyone's clear, the problem, the folks that have testified here this morning, frankly, don't have a beef with state government. No. They have a beef with the federal government.
Absolutely.
Although it circles back around to the fact that the federal government blames our laws on their interpretation. That's a little right. bit fuzzy, but...
Well, and I can... I've actually had to have them write this down for me on several occasions, but their interpretation is that because it's AS 1161-200G, which allows a person who has a set-aside to carry a concealed weapon, but only if they're engaged in hunting and fishing activities and need it for self-protection, or only if they're on their own property. And they read that exception to the permission to carry concealed as being, quote, a restriction on the restoration of your firearms rights. And therefore, if there's any restriction in statutory law at all, it applies to all felons.
And just so we build a good record, we've had a recent administration change in Washington, D.C. Any change in policy or interpretation from the FBI?
No.
Short answer is no. Okay, very good. You have more to tell us.
I do. That being said, I understand why the sponsor is seeking this change in the law. Representation of how the federal government is interpreting the law is accurate. However, I don't know that it's accurate as to the affirmative defense, and that is where the Department of Law's concern is. We are neutral on this, but we do want to put on record that let me back up a little bit. Any discussions I've had with the representative from the FBI have always focused on that portion of our statute that I just spoke to you about.
That you mean G, sub G.
Sub G.
Not sub B Baker that we have here in front of us.
Well, sub B Baker, hang on a minute.
Oh, no, I see the bill repeals G.
The bill repeals A12, F, and G. And basically, G simply provides an affirmative defense for A12, which is concealed weapon.
So we repeal 12, repeal F Foxtrot, and G.
Right. With respect to B, my discussions with the representative from the FBI have always been focused on that section G, and that as long as that section G exists, that is how the federal government will interpret this law. Now, I'm not saying that they haven't said something about the affirmative defense, as Mr. Satterberg says. I don't know that. I've just never had that discussion with them. Our concern is that by switching the burden to the state to prove that a person does not have a right to possess a firearm, that burden will be difficult for us because it's a measuring problem. The counting is the time of unconditional discharge plus 10 years. It can be very difficult to figure out when unconditional discharge is.
Okay, let's stop on that point. I mean, that sounds like a separate problem. I mean, it sounds like we either need to have the Department of Corrections or somebody, you know, throw a red flag up, throw a shoot of fireworks in there, do something to mark that day so that everybody knows what it is.
Problem is always with people that come from other states. That's the problem. I could give you an example. I also am licensed in another state, and in that state, they measure time served as time you're on probation, and then once you've, quote, served all your time, even though you may have, even though the person may have been sentenced to 5 years of probation, in fact, they're going to get unconditional discharge a lot earlier than that, because probation in that state counts as time served. So it's very difficult to calculate. That's all I'm saying.
I didn't mean to interrupt you.
And I didn't mean to interrupt you, sir.
That's okay. I think we're just both having the same thought at the same time. But just for the purposes of building a record, again, it's 10 years after unconditional release.
Correct.
So you're still going to have, I mean, even if you're off by a year or even 2 years, you're going to have a significant period of time, you know, 5+ years, 8 years or so, where a person's been sort of living a blame-free life before they're going to get these rights restored to them.
Yes, the difficulty is going to be with calculating when that date is.
Those or close to the line issues.
Or knowing if they have a pardon. And I just would remind the committee that we have to have proof beyond our position is to know that we can prove every element beyond a reasonable doubt before we charge it. If it would be difficult to look in a record and know that person did not have a pardon.
Hard to prove a negative.
It's
right.
Extremely hard to
prove he didn't
a
have a pardon.
Yeah, our sex offender registration law requires the sex offender to come forward, especially those from other states, mm-hmm. and show that they no longer have to register. Mm-hmm. It would be much easier for us if this law also so provided.
Well, let's just on the pardon issue, just so we all know, my understanding is that pardons are rarely granted, at least here in this state. I don't know about other states, but do you have any idea of how many pardons, unconditional pardons, have been granted to felons here in Alaska?
We don't.
Okay. My understanding is it's small. We'll see if we can find a witness.
I would say that it's probably more than two, as Mr. Patterson has said, because I am aware of his and I am aware of another one that last year as well. I think it's more than that, but I don't think it would be very difficult to find out if a pardon had been granted in Alaska. I'm sure the governor's office keeps records. It's the other states that would be difficult.
Sure. Other questions from members of the committee for Ms. McLean while we have her with us? I don't hear or see any. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else here in the room? Senator, Representative Ramirez, you've got, great. Why don't you come back up and give us a wrap up?
Mr. Chairman, Senators, when we heard this bill in Judiciary Committee, we are policymakers. We isolated this question down to precisely what Sue McLean just said. We worked very closely with the Department of Law, as you know, Mr. Chairman, on the roster of crime bills. And as we discussed this morning, embedded within those three bills were many policy calls. And so we do not disagree with the Department of Law that there is a policy call embedded here, but we deferred to the many Alaskans you just heard from, rather than those folks that are immigrating from other states up here, who then would provide an affirmative defense and assert one of those three claims, that 10 years had elapsed, or that they had served a conviction. I better defer. But it was a policy call, and it was one we deliberated on and then deferred to the benefit of the Alaskans that you heard from, rather than Department of Law. Jane?
Senator French, to the chair, I think it also is the state's burden of proof in a criminal case. And that was the policy call we decided on.
Very good questions from members of the committee for the bill sponsor or Ms. Pearson. Don't hear or see any. This is the only committee to which this bill has been referred. We've got oceans of time and an interesting question here. We'll hold it over and give it some thought. Thank you, everyone, and I appreciate you all being here this morning. With that, we are adjourned.